And we're back here on Unusual Sources, 93.3 CFMU, broadcasting to Hamilton and the surrounding community on 93.3 FM, as well as the rest of the world at cfmu.mcmaster.ca. That's our online streaming service, which you can access from any computer or internet device that can access the websites and flash and so forth. Now, as I promised, we do have Phil Taylor from the Taylor Report joining us right now. Let's see if we have him on the line. Phil, can you hear me?
Yep. How you doing?
I'm glad you're coming in loud and clear.
Good.
You know, we've had your voice on the program in the last few weeks, but not you personally. We played some of you know, you had that great interview with Zafar Bengash about Libya.
He's a lively gentleman.
Yes.
He's on top of everything.
And we haven't had him on the program in a while in here in Hamilton, but we're going to remedy that when we get the chance.
You know, he's been traveling in the Middle East.
Oh, well, good thing I didn't give him a call then. I wouldn't have reached him. But we're going to get him on board and other guests. Now, in your case, I know you've been following the issue of Libya closely, Syria now, the way the media has been handling some things. And I mentioned last week on this program that you really can't believe anything you hear right now about, you know, Syria. It reminds me of the lead up to the war in Iraq. We have, first of all, there was the lesbian blogger story. A lot of people were following that blogger. Then, of course, it turned out that was an American man living.
They were looking for one fraud and found another. They found two frauds.
Well, that's the thing. The other person that came out.
Then they stopped looking. You see, they could have found a lot more.
Right. That's another thing, too. What the media has done now in highlighting this issue, when they looked at it briefly, was they turn it into a joke in that, you know, isn't it funny that, you know, this lesbian blogger is really a man who's living in Scotland and is an American and did this for this reason or that. But they didn't want to look into, I guess, the career background of this person, his family connections. I understand in the case of, I think it was the first blogger that was uncovered there, wasn't his wife an expert on some of the countries under investigation?
Yes, I think that's an excellent place to start, is that when you have a serious liar, and this guy had created a phony blog pretending to be a Syrian lesbian, and then you catch them, as they did with this guy, as soon as he offers an explanation, everybody says, oh, so there you go, that's the explanation. Why would you believe a liar? He's a pretty serious liar. When it say, well, that's his account, let's ask some more questions. And definitely, yes, his wife, according to him, he was with her. They worked in Syria for a couple of years. She was a student, he says. So, in other words, he has a pretty interesting take on the whole thing, which nobody's explained yet why he decided to take it into this realm of a phony Syrian attacking the government of Syria.
It is
and
an
lying
interesting,
about it.
It's an interesting choice. I mean, it wasn't.
Yes, and by the way, when they found him, he wasn't in Scotland. He was in Turkey. He said on vacation. Well, I've heard he say he's on vacation, but you know, Turkey has become a headache for Syria. Turkey's hosted a meeting of people who want to overthrow the government of Syria. So I'd like to know, where in Turkey was he? Who was he seeing in Turkey? You know, we shouldn't just automatically, once a guy has found to be, played the role he's playing, there could be a second or a different explanation. I'm not saying I know, but what I notice is the media doesn't want to follow it any further. They want to make it, well, he's just a funny guy, something strange. But of course, the website that was hosting his blog, happens to be run by a retired military guy. And so I'd like to know a little more about that, too. Why he thought it was important to create a phony lesbian website and using it as a vehicle to attract sympathy for people who are in armed rebellion against the Syrian government, killing Syrian soldiers, killing Syrian policemen, which is unfortunately, there's a rhyme in the sound, but that's pretty serious. And by the way, that's an aspect that is not reported either. The amount of violence coming from armed groups inside Syria, which the media here insists on calling protesters, but a person with a gun, or particularly groups of people with guns, those aren't protesters. I don't know what they are, but they're definitely not protesters.
Well, in Canada, I don't think we'd call them protesters if they were people.
No, one shot. And this town would be locked down. No, you're right. Nobody would ever allow that. But that is how it's done. I mean, I actually saw someone at CBC the other night fulminating, and he said, this man is killing protesters. Well, a lot of these guys have got guns, and according to the statistics, they are scoring pretty high. They killed a good number of Syrian soldiers.
Well, I think you've got to be a professional schizophrenic to be a media commentator these days. Look at Libya, literally talking out of both sides of their mouth on Libya, because on the one hand, they'll interview a government person and say, you know, how's the mission to protect civilians going? And on the other hand, they'll say, and today, the mission to remove Gaddafi advanced in the... Wait a minute. Is it the mission to protect civilians, or is it regime change? They're talking about it both at the same time.
Yeah, no, actually, that was one of the embarrassing... fallouts of the NDP convention was that even some of the nicest, most respectable people that I like very much started talking about the mission. And the mission, well, if you were to ask them, they'd say protect civilians. But the government of Canada has recognized now an armed group which is engaged in a civil war. Now, I'd like to know, if you say that you're protecting Libyans, civilians, what about bombing some of the rebel sites? Because you know, it doesn't make sense. What they're doing is actually supporting one side in a civil war. And by the way, any fool could tell you that if you support somebody engaged in a civil war, a lot of civilians are going to be killed. So it's our job, rather, to challenge them and say, that is a lie. You are not protecting civilians, particularly when you choose to agree to the recognition of a heavily armed, they have tanks, by the way. Earlier on, they had fighter planes, these guys in Benghazi. So the Canadian government has recognized. I'd like to know, why isn't the NDP and the Liberals, etc., why don't they say, you're actually contributing to violence which will cost the lives of civilians? Through recognition of the Benghazi people.
Well, you know, it's pretty hard to argue at this point that prolonging the war has not led to more deaths, because right now the justification, you know, they justified going into Libya. They said, we have to act now. We have to do something because people could get hurt in Benghazi if we don't act now. So now we've been able to prolong the war by, 3 months, and it's still going on. NATO is now training for ground attack in case they need to put boots on the ground. Is that making things safer? Obviously, a lot more people have been engaged in fighting and conflict for a lot longer than they would have, and now it's become almost a medieval siege, a war of attrition. Who's going to starve first? Who's going to starve to death and collapse and capitulate first in Libya?
Yeah, that certainly is. It's, you know, wars are, there's a kind of logic to combat, and it turns into siege, and it comes to, as you say, disease, starvation, the destruction, for example, their decision to destroy military targets, that actually isn't protecting. I mean, what you're doing is trying to increase the strength of one side in a war by, of course, removing the capacity of the other side to fight. So, and down the road, if you don't like massacres, you will find them, because as people are unable to match the weapons of their opponent, that opponent will come in and commit violent acts, and no one will be able to stop it.
Well, you know, the way NATO seems to have been justifying this is, as you say, they say they're leveling the playing field. You know, it looked like Gaddafi was going to win, so they had to wipe out.
Of course, it's not a playing field; it's a civil war.
Right.
And why would anybody want to level it? I mean, and of course the answer is, well, because they're supporting one side. They're actually, we're being lied to, broad gauge lying day in and day out. And by the way, the polls in the United States and the polls in Canada, across Europe too, it clearly indicate the people are actually not fooled. They don't approve of this. They don't like it. They don't think that this is the way to solve it. But we have parties now that are trying to hold us down. They don't want to hear our opinion. They don't want anything. Yeah, they want to make sure that we have to go along. We should tell them we're not going to go along. We should say to them, you know, Libya is part of Africa. The African Union, through its leadership at every level, but most recently, most notably, the president of South Africa visited Libya to try to help bring about a ceasefire and a peaceful resolution, and where all parties are joined in the peaceful resolution. And here, that was treated, the Toronto Star called it palaver. palaver from the president of South Africa. I thought we liked South Africa. I thought everybody takes their hats off when they say Nelson Mandela. But it's his party, and it's his wish that they go with the African Union and get a peaceful resolution of this civil war.
Well, Phil, we in the NATO governments only mention the African Union when it's convenient for us to do so. And I think the level of truth distortion...
Hillary Clinton threatened the African Union. She went to Addis Ababa and threatened them. Get on side. You're on the, she said you're on the wrong side of history. She's history? I wish she was. it's a repulsive thing, as so many people pointed out, that Hillary would dare, given her country's record in relation to Africa and Africans, to go and lecture the African Union, which is offering a peaceful resolution which would save civilians and get that country functioning again. I mean, NATO is destroying the economy of Libya, and that is the most developed economy in the region. It has the highest standard of living. When NATO is through, it will not have the highest standard of living.
Yeah, we've seen that pattern before. I mean, this is Hillary Clinton we're talking about. She's the same person. You may or may not have caught this article, but it was all over the news. She went to lecture Africa about the dangers of colonialism. She said that China's making business deals in Africa. It doesn't tell people what to do, and they got to make more deals with the West and learn from its guidance.
All the anti-aircraft experts of Africa have been keeping an eye out, and they haven't seen any Chinese planes flying over dropping anything on them.
Well, those same
watchers have noticed that Europeans, particularly the French and the Americans and the British, have been bombing in Africa, actually, since they left. They've been at it off and on, but now it's getting completely out of control. I interviewed Edward Herman on my program. You know Edward Herman, the co-author with Noam Chomsky,
yes,
of the wonderful book Manufacturing Consent. And I said to him, you know, the U.S. behaves like a kind of like a drunk in a bar. He said, hey, well, a madman, an armed madman, it'd be closer.
Well, speaking of madmen, I think it was Lindsey Graham in the U.S. now who's pushing for intervention in Syria. And I admire his logic, because he said, if we are able to intervene in Libya based on the idea of protecting civilians, then there's no reason why we should not be able to intervene in Syria likewise.
Yes. Oh, yeah. No, we've really, the heights of hypocrisy and Machiavellianness have been reached. The Toronto Star had an opinion piece the other day by two wise men from a think tank, or maybe it was from a real tank, I don't know. But they said, well, you know, you intervene when you get the chance. You know, we should do this because this is a chance. Unless we have to be real politic, you know. Of course, he means by that, of course we are protecting the monarchies of the Middle East. All those monarchies are solid as a rock, but these countries that have been trying to develop and take their own road and like Libya, grow into a pretty significant economy, they have to be destroyed.
Well, what you're describing
here, just like they destroyed Iraq.
Yeah, this is it's the Ignatieff doctrine. We were forced to read Ignatieff in university, Michael Ignatieff, and he said we should intervene where we can. We won't be able to save everyone in the world, but we need to intervene wherever there's openings.
And
what you can translate that to meaning we should intervene where we want to. And
sure, if we can hire some thugs, create a little fracas, then we break in and arrest everybody.
It's like a giant G20.
Demonstrated in a great American movie called The Grapes of Wrath, where the police don't like the laborers organizing in their camp. So they organize, pay off a couple of guys to start a fist fight in the camp, and then they come to arrest them. But the workers were smart enough that they undermined that, so that when the cops arrived, they said, there is no problem here, nobody's fighting anybody. That was a pretty good scene. And this is what the U.S. wants in Syria. They're already promoting this. They have the other day they tried this thing, and they say there were 7,000 refugees, and Angelina Jolie was flown in to visit those refugees.
Oh, you know things are getting dangerous when they start bringing in the left-wing Hollywood celebrities.
Well, yeah, and then they start talking about, well, maybe we need a buffer zone. Well, let me ask, I would say to everybody, stop and think for a minute. There are 1 million refugees in Syria from Iraq and from Turkey, people who fled those countries. In the case of Iraq, I think half of those refugees are Christians who found themselves after the fall of Saddam at the, you know, with getting their throats cut. They were taken in by Syria. They are living there safe in Syria. That's why they went there. So if you find 7,000 who are escaping a fighting in northern Syria, remember all those other refugees caused by the Americans, and nobody thinks that that's a reason, you know, to do anything about any place that the U.S. caused havoc.
Well, that's, it was,
so,
yeah.
They, Syria should just say, and all the rest of us should say, hey, don't even try that trick. Make it safe enough for those poor people to go back to Iraq, where you, as a result of your bombing and invasion, you have created more than 1 million refugees, who, and thank heaven they can go to Syria. So don't even think about trying this game of talking about 7,000 people who had to flee one village in Syria. No comparison.
It's true. I believe the figures that were given at the last count was something like 1.5 million refugees that the United States created in Iraq, and that was years ago, so that number's probably...
Yeah, they're sort of spread around. Incidentally, I left out. Palestinians, and many of us see the Palestinian issue as sort of the central question for the area causing, historically caused destabilization. A good percentage of those of the million that are in Syria are also Palestinian, because the Palestinians had been friendly with Saddam, and he had protected them. They came in for a really tough treatment. Many of their leaders were killed and whatnot, but they fled into Syria. So that's where they are now. And by the way, Syria keeps those people on its own, out of its own pocket. They're not begging us to, you know, everybody else in the world to pay for that. They're looking after those people.
Yes, these U.S. interventions tend to cause a lot of chaos for the neighboring countries, whether it be in Iraq or Pakistan or wherever. It really destabilizes.
And you have to conclude it's because they want that. I think we have to have a theory that makes some sense. People always describe these things as, oh, they made a blunder. America wasn't thinking, you know, we cannot read their minds, and you may as well go by what they do. They did these things. They went into these places with some illegal and ugly intent. They didn't make a blunder. They went in intentionally.
Yes. Well, I know we have to get going, but I guess we should just mention people should be on the alert. There was that case with France 24 I was reading on CNN, and also The Herald in Australia. It suggested that a French television station had interviewed what they claimed was the Syrian ambassador. And
that's how they presented her. But they said, this is the ambassador from Syria.
They alleged that she was defecting, and she explained that because of human rights violations, she was going to abandon the government, and just like we had seen in Libya. But then what happened was the actual Syrian ambassador complained, saying that wasn't me. And then France 24 had to admit, in fact, it wasn't that the Syrian ambassador. Now, I think last I read, she was charging them because she says there's a systematic bias in the French television station reporting that is always against the government, trying to cause instability or so forth.
Yeah, she's going to do what they did with those bloggers. They will expose them. They will have to abandon somebody because, of course, this is a very important component of how the U.S. operates, and certainly the French and British, too. Disinformation is part of making war, and therefore, by definition, we have to ask how much of what we're seeing is deliberately falsified stories. For example, with the beginning of the trouble in Libya, there were stories, oh, Gaddafi's daughter has defected, so-and-so has defected, so just to cause confusion. And, for example, the one with Syria, they were bound to get caught with that, but it causes all kinds of confusion. And it has a psychological effect inside Syria, because people say, well, how could that happen, you know? And moving from, you know, there was a false thing, how could we have been taken advantage of? It creates unease. And, frankly, the military side of this, and the sabotage side, that's all they want to do. They is to create confusion and unease. They really don't care if you catch a few of their operatives planning phony stories, because by the time you do, they've got three more that have succeeded somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and,
I guess.
And we really, you know, anybody has any respect for military thinking, and there's a lot of pretty high-level thinking goes on, they should realize that that is part of the weaponry of any command center, is disinformation.
You have to be careful what kind of information you pass along, otherwise you're helping these disinformation efforts,
yeah.
I suppose.
Everybody should be highly skeptical. And because, by the way, we live here, so what's our rush? What we should be rushing to do is say we don't like violent solutions, and we do not want our country engaged in killing and destroying property in a country with which we are not at war.
Mm-hmm. And as you say, most
that's
Canadians,
our job.
This has been the fastest turning against a war than I can remember. In Libya, in the United States and Canada, more than 6 out of 10 Canadians and United States citizens appear to be against it. All you have to do is go to the comments sections, read the comment sections in the Globe and Mail and the Toronto Star. And,
yes,
and where,
how about the one, yes, they flew in the guy from the International Criminal Tribunal, and he said, oh, I think Gaddafi's he's organizing rape, and he's giving his soldiers Viagra. And all the letters to all the papers of North America and elsewhere said, are you kidding? And that story has basically been laughed out of court so far, because even Amnesty, and I do not have a lot of respect for them, but Amnesty said, well, actually, there's no evidence. And so why would this guy come in and start shooting his mouth off? Well, he shoots his mouth off so they can shoot their cannons. It's all just part and parcel of a violent assault on the people of Libya, which we have no business doing.
Yeah.
And by the way, one of the reasons we're doing it is people think they can get away with it. It's as though we'll never have to pay for any of this. I don't understand. Libyans should be demanding that everything be rebuilt that got blown up. For example, one of the universities right there in Tripoli was blown up. Well, our guy was the commander. I think it ought to come out of our taxpayer money.
Well, I believe our guy there said that we're choosing targets very carefully, and they're aware of everything that goes on. So that's what he said on that.
So I'm taking him at his word. Mm-hmm. He says he fires with precision and care. Well, okay, that means he targeted that university.
I guess, you know, if you're at a university that's not pro-NATO, you got to be careful. You could become a legitimate military
target.
Well,
how about if you're a Libyan and like to help your people? Here, you would be told to get out of this country.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But if you are a Libyan who wants to go and join an armed rebellion, they pat you on the head and offer you a Nobel Prize.
Yeah, yeah. There was I saw a great interview with George Galloway and a member of the opposition having that little debate on that program. So the information's all out there, and CNN letters page, people don't seem to buy the World War I style propaganda stories as readily as they might, and you can thank 10 years of war for that, George Bush, weapons of mass destruction and all that.
And the people have been through a lot of wars. They're getting kind of tired of them, and they're tired of having their legs pulled, you know.
Yes. Yes.
Hey, let's give the Pope credit. He says to stop the bombing, and his representative in Tripoli he was the first really notable individual to stand up and say this is crazy, and it's got to be stopped.
And perhaps
I don't see why the Western media. I mean, one of the things that defines Western culture, the Roman Catholic Church, is a rather important part of it.
I guess also, you know, being there, having the bombs dropped on you can change your perspective a bit. And I know Cynthia McKinney, she's someone who went down there, put herself in harm's way to report on what was going on, had a fact-finding mission there. I think she's coming back long from now. So she'll be in the United States touring with what she saw, videos, probably photographs. So I'm looking forward to seeing that, hearing about that. It's good
people
to see.
Yes, Google that. And there's plenty of tape of her talking writing. She's a wonderful, wonderful individual.
Good. Well, as I said, the information's out there. People caught on fairly quickly with the Libya thing, and we just have to be skeptical, keep our eyes peeled in terms of the Syria case, because there's people pushing.
Yeah, and speak up to all these people who claim that they are social democrats or that they believe in international law. International law has been thrown right out the window. And the African Union is the one pointing it out. as well as the General Assembly of the United Nations.
Well, we need to listen to the African Union instead of pretending we do, because the African Union was used as a justification in the House of Commons debate. People, the conservatives said, everyone's on board with this. The United Nations, the Arab League, the African Union, they all wanted this war. No, they didn't.
That's a lie.
That's a lie. You can flat-out lie in the House of Commons now. So,
yes.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. People need to do some fact-checking, read up on these transcripts. Anyway, Phil, I want to thank you very much. This was incredible, and you looked at everything and covered it all.
We covered the waterfront.
Yeah. Okay, well, thanks, Phil.
Okay.
Good day.
We'll talk later.
Thanks. Bye-bye.